Next up on 3CR is Talkback with Disability Attitude. Studio guests are Kerry Presser, State Manager for National Disability Services Victoria, Denise Allen, former State MP, and Adam Jones, Volunteer Solicitor. They're here to talk about experiences of disability, identity and exclusion, and what's got to change for people with disabilities. If you've got an opinion and you want to have your say, call 3CR now on 94190155. That's 94190155. And talk back on disability and turn up your radio. We've got something to say.
Why aren't people with disabilities represented in Parliament? Do we need a national disability insurance scheme? And what is a disability? This Thursday, December 3rd, is International Day for Persons with Disabilities, and 3CR's Talk Back with Attitude is dedicated to a discussion on disability issues. With a panel featuring Kerry Presser from National Disability Services Victoria, Volunteer Solicitor Adam Jones, and former State Member of Parliament Denise Allen. So call 3CR between 9:30 and 11 a.m. Put your question to the panel, tell us about your community event, or just get your campaign out there. The number to call is 03 9419 0155.
Turn up your radio, I got something to say.
Welcome to 3CR Talkback on 3rd of December, International Day of People with Disabilities. And I have with me here Kerry Presser, Disability Discrimination. Disability. And we're going to... Oops, and the power's gone off. You're listening to 3CR Talkback with Attitude on International Day of People with Disabilities with me, Helen Gwilliam, and Kerry Presser and Adam Jones. Hi, Kerry. We'll just introduce you briefly. You're the CEO of National Disability Services Victoria. Can you just tell us what you do?
National Disability Services is a membership association or organisation, and we support disability service providers to provide the best quality services they can. We also work with government to advocate for better policy and better funding for people with a disability.
And Adam, you're a solicitor and you volunteer at the Disability Discrimination Legal Service. What else do we need to know about you for listeners?
I have a disability myself. I have permanent double vision and epilepsy as a result of a cancer brain tumour I had 20 years ago. So in that respect, I can definitely understand the situations of any people who call in that respect.
And my name is Helen Gwilliam. I'm a 3CR volunteer broadcaster, and I have a disability too. If you have a disability, call in. What is disability? Do you even call yourself a person with a disability? That's one of the issues we can talk about today, along with accommodation, services, funding, and what do we need in the way of legal reform? I mean, Adam, perhaps we can ask you, people who don't provide accessible venues anymore because they're filling it full of merchandise, is there anything we can do about that?
From a legal perspective, there certainly is, in terms of the fact that there is something called the Disability Access Standards that are related to the Disability Discrimination Act. I can give you the phone number of the Disability Discrimination Legal Service, and you might like to give them or myself a call. I work on Thursdays and Fridays there. Just let me get the number for you.
Yep.
And do you have any views on that?
I think you're right, Adam. It's access by people with a disability to shops and to housing and infrastructure generally is often really fraught. There's a big move certainly to push accessible housing options in new housing. But this issue is one that people experience every day, and I'd suggest also going to your local MP and talking to your local MP about the issue.
So perhaps if people wait until the end of the program, I can give that number out, and we can perhaps go from there. I'd just like to say I think this is an issue that people with disabilities constantly face in terms of the fact that the world isn't designed for people with disabilities. So there's seems to be a lack of consideration whenever people are planning spaces and access to spaces about the fact that people with disabilities might need to access those spaces. So I think if we can look to find a way to address that, that'll make a big difference.
And our first caller is Jan from Mentone. Hi, Jan. What would you like to say?
It's to do with, for a long time, there's been no railings each side of a ramp, which was redone at Chelsea Railway Station.
Uh-huh.
So for about a year, I've been annoyed about that. I've made several phone calls to Connex when it was Connex. And then recently they told me to ring the Department of Transport about the railing, the lack of railings, and so after a short time they rang and told me that they're going to put the railings there. They were there before and people have had to do with them without them for a long time, and I need those to kind of get up the ramp.
The transport's a big area of concern for people with disabilities. Is that something you hear about a lot, Adam, at the DDLS?
It is. It's a frequent issue. So certainly, again, that's something that we could perhaps look at as well. I have to say that my own experience, particularly in terms of trams, ticket machine is a totally unsuitable way for people with disabilities to be able to access trams and the service.
Yeah, and I guess we can expect with Mikey coming in that there might be a bit more in complaints as well. I'm a bit worried about that because I use trams a lot and I'm not quite sure how I'm supposed to balance and swipe something at the top of the station, the steps.
Exactly, yeah.
You're listening to Talk Back with Attitude. Thanks, Jan, for that call. And if you want to talk back to us, call in on 9419 0155. And a few more examples of issues about disability access.
I'm Anin Abdallah. Don't these people with disabilities because they're able to do anything?
Hi, folks. My name is Amanda Hisco, and I'm going to give you all out there vital but very important message. For people with disabilities all around the world to have their say and be able to stand up for their rights, and also should be given a try at new skills and knowledge, and we're all out there and we've got abilities to do things all we need is people to take off their horse gloves and see us. It's people first and ability second and disability third. We want to be respected on that line of thing I've given, and a happy International Day for all you guys out there. Bye.
That was Amanda Hisco with her take on disability. Adam, one of the things that comes up a lot and has come a lot during this project is, what do you call yourself if you have a disability? I grew up in England and people there use the term disabled persons. Here there's much more a view that you put the people first and it's people with disabilities. What do you think about identity? How would you identify yourself?
This is a major thing I like to talk about. On the one hand, I like to say I'm disabled and proud in terms of explaining to people about the strength that people with disabilities have, the way that we're able to overcome all the difficulties, all the barriers that we face in a world that's not designed for people with disabilities. But on the other hand, when you talk about disability, people assume that there's something wrong with you, that there's some kind of deficit, that you're lacking in some way. So in some ways, I think if people could be looked on with disabilities in terms of the amazing things that they're able to do, the unique abilities that they have, that might be a way to overcome all those stereotypes, the stigmatization, that ultimately lead to intimidation and a lack of self-esteem.
So do we need a new term for everyone to feel comfortable with? Is the word disabled, does that put people off, if they don't have a disability, engaging with people with disabilities?
Carrie and I were speaking about this before. Carrie might like to say something in that regard, Carrie?
Look, I wouldn't presume to tell people with a disability how they should think of themselves, but it really, we were talking a little bit about impairments, the fact that many of us are born with impairments or we acquire an impairment, whether it's visual or whatever. And but the disability is a social construct. It's the barriers that our communities create for people with a disability create the disability. And there are many people with impairments who don't consider themselves to have a disability, while others really struggle to do the things that the rest of us take for granted because of the barriers that our society puts up. And so some of those barriers might be the one that the previous caller referred to, you know, people who are absolutely unable to do everyday things like get into the local shop or visit their local doctor or go to their club because they can't enter the building or there's not appropriate seating or whatever. So that was our discussion, Adam. Mm.
So we've already seen from a legal perspective and I guess a social perspective as well, a development towards better, more appropriate terminology. Of course, 10 or 20 years ago, we had handicapped.
Yes.
That's moved to...
I had a card when I was growing up that said I was a registered physically handicapped person.
How did that make you feel?
Well, it didn't seem to get me any great perks. If it had come with lots of freebies, I mightn't have minded it.
So then we've moved now to, in the legislation at least, it being called an impairment, and that's moved beyond disability to impairment. But again, all of those terms seem to focus on the negative rather than the positive. So I guess it's a matter of trying to find the balance between both.
Okay. You're listening to 3CR, Talk Back with Attitude, on International Day of People with Disabilities. Give us a call. How do you identify yourself if you have a disability? Call 94190155. If you don't have a disability, are you scared of people with disabilities? Why? What are you worried about? Give us a call. We'll be back in a moment.
Malfunction, malfunction, malfunction.
And that was Rudely Interrupted, Melbourne band. You'll be able to see tonight on ABC One at 9:35 a.m. Sorry, PM. All of the members of Rudely Interrupted are people with disabilities, and they performed at the UN last year for International Day of People with Disability. You're listening to Talk Back on 3CR for International Day of People with Disabilities. Call us on 9419 if you want to talk about disability issues. We've been joined now, as well as Carrie Presser from National Disability Services and Adam Jones from a volunteer solicitor. We've also got Denise Allen, former Member of Parliament for Benalla. Hi, Denise.
Hi, Helen.
Thanks for joining us.
Lovely to be here.
Do you want to give a bit of background of your experience of disability?
Yes, look, I actually spent probably the first two-thirds of my life without a disability, and I actually have a disability called Charcot-Marie-Tooth, otherwise known as CMT or peroneal muscular atrophy, which affects the lower extremities, below the knee and below the arms. And it's since I've actually had the disability, which was diagnosed 19 years ago in 1990, you actually become very aware of what it's like to go from a life as an able-bodied person to a person with a disability, and and what a dramatic change it is, and how you view the world so differently in terms of access, in terms of discrimination in many forms, be it employment, just in total acceptance. And it's very interesting going from one to the other. But yes, I actually spent probably the first part of my life working career in the modelling industry, of all things, which some people say to me, well, how could that be a grounding for politics? And I just say to everybody, well, they're both ruthless, bitchy industries, so it's a perfect grounding. And teaching life skills and motivation as a motivational tutor. And I became a Member of Parliament for the state seat of Benalla in May 2000 in the by-election as part of the BRACS government, but unfortunately lost it in the 2002 election. It was very, very difficult to hold a seat that had been Conservative for 97 years. They were a bit shocked with the fact that not only did they have a Labor member, they had a Labor member who was a woman. They had a Labor member who was divorced. They had a Labor member who was a woman, divorced and with a disability, and blonde hair.
Oh, everything.
It shocked. It
the whole package.
Shocked the old guard. Something terrible.
All right. Well, we might come back and talk about politicians' awareness of disability a bit later. But at the moment, we've got Brian from Moreland on the line. Hi, Brian. What would you like to say?
I just thought to say that, lately I've been losing consciousness a lot, and I'm still trying to figure out what it is. It's not the epilepsy, which I have through an industrial accident at work.
Mm-hmm.
To be quite frank, the young kids seem more inclined to help you out, where the older people, my age, 60-odd, you ask them, can you get an ambulance for me or get the police? They just look at you and think you're an alcoholic or a drug addict and leave you there.
So do you think that means that younger people are developing a better attitude about disability, a bit more understanding?
Yes, well, probably that, plus the fact that they know me a good bit, but being on protest marches. But I find that the young ones tend to help you out more in your hour of need than the older people.
And the panel, Kerry, what do you think about that? Do you think that's a common experience for people who ask for help, that some people are a bit frightened about what your condition might be?
Absolutely, and I think many disabilities are hidden, and particularly epilepsy is one of those disabilities that people don't like to disclose because there's such a stigma about people with epilepsy, and if people are experiencing difficulties, as this gentleman obviously has, it's not readily apparent what the cause of that is, and people's reaction is often one of trying not to be involved. But young people, I think it depends a lot. There's a big emphasis in schools and kindergartens on including everybody and valuing everybody for what they can contribute. So I'd like to think that things are changing, but it's something that we absolutely have to keep working on, because it's not going to happen by itself.
No. So, Brian, what do you think would help people to be a bit more understanding about epilepsy?
Well, I don't know, but I'm getting helped at the moment by St Vincent de Paul and the alert team from St Vincent's Hospital that come out here at least once a week to check up on me. seeing that I haven't got any family here in Victoria. I really need their help and I appreciate it. But how do you teach old people an old dog new tricks?
Denise?
It's pretty hard.
Yeah, Denise, what do you think about teaching old dogs?
I know exactly what you're saying. I've experienced this sort of discrimination myself because I'm in a situation where if I actually fall over, I can't get up unless I have something to lever myself up on. And I've had an experience once in a small country town where I fell over in the middle of the street at 6 o'clock at night and couldn't get up and started crawling across the street to get to the nearest car to use that as my leverage. And it got back to me that somebody reported the fact that, oh, look at that drunk woman crawling across the road. Now, I happened to be on community radio at the time, so I actually had a few words to say about it. But the thing about it is that we have to educate the community to assume first that people have a disability, not assume first that they're drunk or a drug addict. Always assume first that maybe that person has a disability or maybe that person has had some sort of incident that had caused them to fall over or need some specific help at that point in time. And I actually think it's a real blight on society that they think first that people are either drunk or a drug addict rather than that they're somebody who have generally need help.
Yes, and the other thing, of course, is I'm not paid to say this, but the staff at 3CR are absolutely tremendous towards me when I go in there.
Fantastic. That's wonderful.
You're listening to 3CR. Thanks for that, Brian. You're listening to 3CR Talkback 94190155. Adam, you have experience of epilepsy?
I do, yes. And I'd recommend to Brian that if he's having some problems with his epilepsy, that he look at what medication he might change to. I had a seizure last year after being off my medication for some time, and when I changed my medication, it made a substantial difference. So that might be something to consider. On that topic, though, I'd like to talk to people about the embarrassment aspect of people without a disability assisting people with a disability. Mm-hmm. That seems to be a major consideration. I think it goes back to what Denise spoke about, which is the education side of things and how do we educate people about looking at people, as I said once, you know, earlier before, about looking at people with disabilities in terms of their strengths rather than their weaknesses, and assuming not automatically to in some way feel sorry for people with disabilities, but to communicate with people with disabilities, relate to people with disabilities, and find out all the barriers that they're able to overcome, all the achievements that they've been able to make in terms of overcoming those barriers.
One of the things that tends to put people off, you're listening to 3CR, call in for Talkback 94190155. One of the issues that people say a lot is, I don't know whether to offer help, I don't know whether people will be offended. How do you deal with that? I mean, I tend to be in a good enough mood to accept help or just politely decline it, but sometimes you just had a bad day, haven't you?
Well, I know that a friend of mine who is in a wheelchair does not appreciate people trying to push her in terms of, she's very independent in that wheelchair. Mm-hmm. She uses it very well, and she said that quite a few times she's been very upset when people say at traffic lights have tried to push her across the crossing.
It is an intrusion into your personal space, isn't it, when people just, you wouldn't just touch an able-bodied person's leg and start making them move.
Absolutely. So I think it's a matter of talking to people, asking them, do you need assistance, as opposed to making assumptions either way.
You're listening to 3CR, International Day of People with Disabilities. Up next, we've got Eve from Karen. Hi, Eve.
Hi, how are you?
What would you like to say?
I'd like to say that how well I'm listening to what, well, and I have been through what everybody else have said. Hi, how are you? I
think you're hearing yourself back a bit there.
I am.
Have you got the radio on there, Eve?
Yes, I have. I'll turn it off. I would also like to say that I have been treated... One moment.
That's all right.
I am being treated negatively in the business world,
yep,
as well as at courses that I wanted to do because I can't get into courses. The people are telling me not that I cannot do the course, especially in the field of work that I want to do, which is working with the disability. And they are telling me that I cannot do the course. Why don't I go into another field? I'm too skilled to do the course. And that the fact that why don't I look in the business world, which is not the attitude that they weren't supporting me.
So why was that?
Because of the fact that I don't know. I was not supported. And I don't think that was fair.
Yeah.
She knows I'm skilled. I also wish to advertise Leadership Plus because Leadership Plus is also helps the disability.
So, Kerry, one of the issues for people with disabilities getting into employment, particularly where you want to transfer your skills about how you've lived with disability and the skills you've gained around that, that's quite difficult to communicate to people that your experience as a person with a disability brings skills, isn't it?
It does indeed. And that the fact that I have the skills there to be utilised, and it's nothing worse when people push you aside and say you can't do it, and that is what has happened to me.
Kerry, would you like to comment on that from a service provider point of view?
Look, I think that experience is quite common, and I think that employers have a responsibility to look at their employment practices and make sure that they're accessible and responsive and encouraging in relation to people with a disability actually applying. So they need to look at how they set up their selection process, who they're considering, and make sure that that people with a disability are encouraged and supported through that process. The research shows us that people with a disability are incredibly good workers. They're extremely reliable. They stay a long time. They're productive. And so there are real benefits for employers in employing people who have a disability.
You're right there.
We're right. Denise, were there many people with disabilities working in Parliament when you were there?
No. There was only one other woman who had a mild disability, and another chap who had a hearing impairment. He is still actually in the Victorian Parliament. That's Bob Stensholt. But I found that even when I got to Parliament with my disability, it was actually getting around Parliament. Mm. Parliament was just, because it's a historic building, it was very, very poorly designed for people with disabilities. In fact, the only disabled toilet they had in Parliament at the time was right down in the bowels of Parliament, what we call the bowels of Parliament, which is the underground, the back entrance way. And because actually while I was there, I actually had my right hip replaced as a result of my disability. And the maintenance guys at Parliament were fantastic. They were running around organising little toilet seats for me and familiar, you know, sort of apparatus that I was able to use to get around Parliament. They were absolutely fantastic. But actually now they have got disabled toilets on the first floor, and they're quite lovely. And
we should all go and use them there.
I actually got an occupational therapist in from St Vincent's Hospital to go right through Parliament. She was absolutely gobsmacked that the very house that makes the laws and legislation around things, and particularly with people with disabilities, was not disabled. This doesn't have disabled access. I mean, I don't think many people with disabilities actually know that they can actually go from Spring Street through the side gate and around into the back of the back entrance of Parliament to actually get in and then have access to the lifts, because you certainly can't get up all those steps at the front of Parliament.
Mm. And Adam, just from on the employment front, now you're very highly qualified. You've got a law degree. You're admitted to practice as a solicitor. How do you find fronting up to employers and saying, I've got all this stuff, I've done all the work, I want a job?
Well, I'm actually going through that process at the moment. I work as a discrimination risk management consultant for one company, but that company doesn't provide legal work, so I want to work as a solicitor. And the big issue for me right now is disclose or not disclose. Again, I want to disclose on the basis of the fact that I want the employers to see this is a very strong characteristic I have, the problem-solving skills, everything that I've mentioned before. But on the other hand, are they going to look at me and say, well, how can this person be a lawyer, given the major work elements of being a lawyer, which is reading. So if I have double vision, do they think I'll be able to do that? The stamina that's involved in doing the long hours. So I think we need to find, again, it comes back to education in respect to how can we spread the word that having a disability doesn't mean that you're not able to do things, and it's a strength.
Yeah, I mean, I had the same experience when I tried to get work after I'd finished my education, and I'd finished my education in England, and at the time you could tick lots of boxes on job application forms and disclose your disability, but there was no real protection at that time. So basically all it meant was that you tick the box saying I have a disability and then you never got an interview. So I stopped doing it.
Yeah, I actually still think that even though there is a lot of legislation out there against discrimination against people with disabilities of any sort, there is still, and you can't identify it because they don't make it known, but there is still an underlying discrimination there, because if you're not successful in getting the job, you never know whether it was because, A, you just didn't have the qualifications of the job, or that the employers have been too scared to employ you with a disability because of the fact that they're scared about their workplace safety. They're scared about all the problems that may arise. For example, if I was working in an environment and I fell over, what would they do? Would they might be worried about whether I would sue them and all this sort of thing. So there is still an underlying discrimination there with employers, but you would never know.
No.
Because you would just think you just didn't get the job because somebody else was more qualified than you, or they chose somebody else above you.
That's right. Mm. Eve, thanks for your call. Do you have any other comments just to finish?
No, I agree with them. I've only got a slight disabled hand, and I do think some of the employers are frightened because of the fact that they are frightened because that the person comes in with a disability that can override them or be better than them, that they are frightened of that person because of the person still has a disability. And also I was going to advertise Leadership Plus. Leadership Plus is an organisation that helps the disabled.
Yeah, so what does it do?
They teach the disabled how to be leaders.
Excellent. So are you a leader?
In the business world.
And you're a leader yourself?
I could be if I was given an opportunity to work.
Great. Well, good luck with that, and thanks for calling us, Eve.
Okay, well.
And that was Eve from Carrum. Next up, we've got Sue from Altona. Hi, Sue. What would you like to say? Nope, Sue's gone. Sue, are you there? No, we've got lost Sue. So just back on the parliamentary issue, Denise, did you experience much awareness of disability issues, apart from running around with your workplace assessor being horrified by the building? Did you get much sense from your colleagues in Parliament that, you know, one in five people in Australia have disabilities? They must have had family members with disabilities. Did it inform their decision making?
No, look, to be perfectly honest, I found the whole experience of the 2.5 years that I was in Parliament quite distressing, actually. There was very little sympathy, because what actually happened was, even though I had my disability before I went into Parliament, during the by-election, I actually the effects of my hip came into play. I started to have major pain. I actually had 4 cortisone injections in my right hip during the by-election to get me through the by-election, and it was in 12 months of that the osteoarthritis actually graduated in my hip to a hip replacement, just within 12 months. It was a very, very difficult time. It was extremely painful, and it was very difficult getting up every day and working 90, 100 hours a week. And I found, and particularly when I was in Parliament, I actually found very little sympathy. I suppose now I may get more, this particular time, because there's more members of Parliament, but at that particular point in time, the BRACS government needed the 3 independents.
All right, and we're back now with Sue from Altona. Hi, Sue, what would you like to talk about?
I'm the mother of 3 young adult women, 2 of whom have a physical disability.
Mm-hmm.
My girls have cerebral palsy. They're both very articulate, and I'm very lucky. But I have to say to people out there who might be listening who are going through the grind that we went through with primary school and secondary school and university, just hang in there because it's worth it just to see these young women achieve. They've done it themselves with some basically family support in the background because there's not a lot of other support out there. But it's not easy. You really have to become a very strong parent to help your young people achieve. My girls were very lucky that they grew up in an era of integration and there was never an option that they wouldn't go to the primary school and the secondary school and have an option to go to university, but it takes a lot of time on the part of the family to ensure that they can do what everybody else does.
So what kind of services should have been there, Sue?
Probably particularly in secondary school, there was not as much assistance, and at university, there's not a lot of assistance available to help young people at university. One of my girls is more independent than the other, than her twin sister, and she chose to go into state to university, and the DLU at ANU was sensational, and she didn't need any attendant care or support for personal needs. But her sister, who is in a wheelchair, who has far more restrictions on her ability to do things on her own, she required assistance at university and it was just not always forthcoming. There were shifts not filled, all sorts of things. I wouldn't like to think of how many days during the 3 years of her undergraduate degree that I sat in the car park or in the cab so that when she needed to use the bathroom, there was someone to take her.
A curious aspect of that, Sue, is that you will find, in fact, that your daughters and yourself have acquired a number of skills in
yes.
respect to having to deal with those institutions
yes.
and having to deal with all those situations that in the long run will actually be beneficial to you.
My girls are seriously frighteningly independent, particularly Meredith, who's in Canberra. She's fiercely independent. She did a double degree of Asian Studies Law. She's actually being admitted next week to the bar in Canberra.
That's great.
Fantastic. Congratulations.
She took herself to Japan as part of the year of her degree to study in Japan for a year. As a mother, that was frightening, but for her it was sensational, you know. And Liz, who's here, was actually on the radio earlier this morning speaking about university. She's involved at WIDAS and she's quite an advocate out there and is working as a social worker in policy and planning. But they are very fiercely independent despite any limitations physically that they might have, you know. Liz, particularly because of being in a wheelchair, it's just more difficult to get out and about because she needs some assistance with personal care, and that's just a funding issue which everybody will encounter if they have a child or a young adult with a disability.
Carrie, do you want to comment on the funding issues?
Look, I do, Sue, and I think you've talked about your girls being lucky, but it shouldn't be a matter of luck.
No.
It's a human rights issue that everybody in our society who is experiencing difficulty, every Australian should have the opportunity to be as independent as they can and access the support that they need in order for that to happen. And at the moment, our disability support system is rationed. It's severely
yes.
rationed.
We've yes.
got a government that is sympathetic to the needs of people with a disability and has an aspirational state disability plan. But at the moment, it's a hollow promise. We really need this issue to be taken on by all the parliamentarians. I think that they regard disability as a private issue, and it's something that we need to be talking about very loudly with our friends, with our communities, because it's not a fair go for people with a disability. They shouldn't have to hope that they're one of the lucky ones.
No,
it's
I agree.
Expanding.
No, I mean, Liz is quite an advocate and she's out there and at lots of things and many people get letters and all sorts of things and just speak to her. But I just, I suppose my girls probably would have been as strong as they are anyway, but it has been, and this is where people shouldn't get discouraged if their children are quite young and they feel like they're fighting the system. Keep fighting it because your kids will take on the role and it has to improve. And look, it has improved since my girls were little.
And look, National Disability Services is looking for an investment of $33 million at a minimum in the next state election. The government hasn't funded the full cost of service delivery in disability for many years. And organisations are just struggling to make up the gap through fundraising and careful investment. And they just can't maintain this.
Look, I had to have some surgery a fortnight ago. We could not get respite or assistance anywhere. And so we have had to just book double shifts on Liz's support package she receives. And it means that in January we won't be able to have, she won't be able to have any support hours to make up what we've had to use.
And respite is one of those.
Which is ridiculous.
Respite is one of those critical services that keeps families together and keeps them afloat and enables them to manage what can be a very challenging situation. And there's an absolute paucity of respite places. We've got people who desperately need long-term housing and accommodation and who are being placed in respite services because those long-term options aren't available. So we've got many, many people, 1,300 people, who are in crisis just waiting for accommodation that's long-term.
Adam,
I was interested in what Adam said before about disclosure or non-disclosure when looking at employment, because we've just been down that path fairly heavily in the last year, and Meredith has chosen not to disclose, and just she is working in a legal office, and it took the people there a little while to realise that she walked maybe a bit differently to everybody else, but it's a huge decision when you're applying for jobs.
Expanding from what Kerry was saying before about disability services being orientated towards being more of a personal matter rather than a something that an organisation approaches somebody with a disability about how they can find solutions to their problems. I think that that's a major problem in terms of the fact that you have enough difficulties already with the fact that you have a disability. You then have to approach, for example, the disability liaison unit at a university rather than them typically approaching you. You then have to speak to lecturers. You then have to organise all these different aspects of getting support where that should really be designed in a way that immediately identifies the fact that you have special needs and that people should work with you towards meeting those needs.
All right. Thanks for your call, Sue. You're
That's
listening.
All right. Thank you. You're doing an amazing job today. It's very interesting listening. Thank you.
And that was Sue from Altona. You're listening to 3CR on International Day of People with Disabilities. We're having talk back on disability issues. We've got Kerry Presser from National Disability Services Victoria, Adam Jones, who's a solicitor who volunteers at Disability Discrimination Legal Service and is a consultant, and Denise Allen, who's formerly State Labour Member of Parliament for Benalla, and myself, Helen William, and I've got a disability too. And we've got next on the line Val from Sunshine. Hi, Val.
Val from West Footscray.
West Footscray, sorry.
Listen, I'm the mother of a son who's schizophrenic, right?
Yep.
Now, to lose your bloody arm or leg would be easier than putting up with them.
Yeah?
Right?
Why is that?
Why? Because their brain's affected, that's why.
So what does that...
That's a disability.
Yeah, it is.
It is
a disability. Now, I've got a teacher daughter, and he's a twin.
Yeah.
And that's crook.
And I think what, you know, the issues for people with mental illness are many.
It's a mental illness, yeah.
And again, there's a paucity of support services in that area as well.
Oh, yeah.
So families are under incredible pressure. We know that care...
Yeah, I'm a carer of him.
Yeah.
But they're crook to put up with sometimes. At least these other people, they could have a talk.
That's
right. That have been on, they could have a talk to someone.
So you find you're very isolated?
No, not really.
Yep.
No, not all that. I'm just saying because it's Disability Day.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to join them sitting around in a ring.
No, of course you don't. You want people doing meaningful activities, employed if they can be, which is what all of us want to do.
No, I don't think so. He'll be like this. He's not a young boy.
Okay.
He's like that.
Okay. But we do know that carers experience a high level of depression.
Well, I think they're going to go
Compared
somehow.
Maybe. So what kind of support would you like to get, Val, for yourself? You have someone to talk
me?
To.
Me? No support.
No?
No, I'm all right. I'm a pretty strong woman.
Well, you'd have
I don't
to
want any support.
Yeah.
What support could they give me?
I don't know. Just some days off.
You could only talk.
Yeah.
And mix with people like you that have got the same illness.
Yeah.
You know? So it's still a stigma.
Well, there is. Do you think it's worse for mental illness still than with other disabilities?
Do I think what?
The stigma there for mental illness is still a big issue?
Yes, I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. No, they're not doing nothing to me. No one's doing nothing to me. You're told to get out the way. I said, say excuse me. But it only gets worse. You've got to watch that you don't laugh at them in any way.
Yeah.
Put your hand over your bloody mouth before you laugh. Or they might flatten you.
All right, thanks for your call.
Okay,
then.
Bye.
Bye, have a good day. And that was Val from West Footscray. Not Sunshine, so I stand corrected on that.
I think mental illness is a huge problem. Recently, we had the incident at Thomas Embling where one of the inmates actually stabbed to death two other inmates. And I had to actually ring the ABC radio on this particular issue because they were talking to a highly renowned psychologist, and he made the comment. He said, "These are not good people in Thomas Embling."
Mm.
And I was furious at that comment. So I rang them and I said, actually, these people are good people in Thomas Embling. They are good people who the mental health system has let down, both state and nationally, over so many years, because there has just been so little services, particularly people with dual diagnosis, which is alcohol and drugs, very little support for people with dual diagnosis. And I've actually experienced this firsthand with a friend of mine whose daughter had had dual diagnosis and who actually is now in Thomas Embling. But it's the failure of the system over so many years of governments of all persuasions that have failed to support and put funding into disability service, be they mental, be they physical, be they sensory, whatever. It's a failure of the governments to recognise this as a major issue.
Denise, the Australian government's taken some leadership in this area and has announced a feasibility study
into the National
Disability Insurance Scheme. And that concept, it might be a levy like the Medicare levy, for example, and it will provide support. It would be designed to provide an entitlement to support to everyone who is either born with a disability or who acquires one during their life. And so I think that if that's something that we need to talk up in
Absolutely.
Our communities and we need to promote. And while the report won't be out for until the middle of 2011, that offers a way forward and a way that will change many, many lives and move from this system where supports are rationed to a system where people have an entitlement and
yes.
choice.
I actually think we're very fortunate now that we have Bill Shorten as Parliamentary Secretary for Disability Services and also Jenny Macklin in Community Services, disability services over so many years has just been a non-issue. It's been a non-subject. It has been regarded as personal that we actually just quite simply have to deal with it ourselves. But both Bill and Jenny, particularly Bill, are out there constantly talking about what they're doing in disability services. They're raising the profile of this issue constantly. And the disability insurance plan program that they're actually announced a feasibility study for today, they're announcing the people who are going on that particular feasibility study today, is just amazing, you know, and they are putting in more money than has ever been put in before into disability services, which is wonderful, but it's still not enough.
And we do have a lot of inquiries going on at the moment. There's the Productivity Commission report, there's the National Disability Strategy consultation, there's the immigration review. So, you know, if Bill Shorten, which inevitably I'm sure will get reshuffled somewhere else, is that impetus going to disappear, or is this something that we think is really getting some legs now?
Look, I think it's gaining legs, but we really need the community to be actively talking about it and promoting, talking with their MPs, getting their MPs to the coffee groups or the play groups or whatever, so that they're very aware that this is a real issue on the ground, because without that community support, if people continue just to get on with it and do the best they can privately, it's not going to continue to get the attention. So in order to convince politicians that this is absolutely essential for people with a disability, we all need to be talking it up.
But not only, sorry, I'm so sorry.
One of the aspects, I guess, of policy development is, particularly in terms of who you speak to in relation to that policy development, and I think too often people directly with disabilities are not involved in that process, partly in terms of the fact that the people who are doing that policy development, to some extent, don't necessarily think of the capacity of people with disabilities to contribute to that. And I think also partly in terms of the fact that the people who are developing those policies just aren't able to think in a way that a person with a disability is able to think. And I think that that comes out most starkly in terms of the experience that I've had at the Disability Discrimination Legal Service in respect to the fact that the legal system is really in no way suitably designed to address the needs of people with disabilities, because the focus is really on the individual to be able to carry their case through and to support that. So you need it's an adversarial system. So you have one person fighting against another, and if you have a disability, you're automatically disadvantaged in that respect. So again, we need to find some way of removing those barriers, and also being able to find a way that consultation can include people with disabilities.
You're listening to 3CR on Talkback, International Day of People with Disabilities. Call us if you want to have a talk about disability issues. And online at the moment, we've got Sue from Parkville. Hi, Sue. What would you like to talk about?
Hi, everybody. I'd just like to talk about employment for people with disabilities. And I think, actually, one of your panellists might recognise my voice.
Yes, I do, Sue.
How are you, Kerry?
Yeah, good, Sue.
That's good. I just wanted to say that I was looking for work through a disability employment agency. I have had a job previously and looked through work through the disability employment agency for that job. And but I had to leave that job through my position restructure. And I'm now working at National Disability Services, and I'm very happy.
Well, that's a good story.
And we're very happy to have Sue too. She's a great contributor to our team.
So is employment of people with disabilities by disability service providers something that doesn't happen enough?
I think you're right. It doesn't happen enough. It's something that we're focusing on with our service providers, and government is the state government has acknowledged that it's not happening enough in state government either. And we need to lead from the front. So we're working on that with government. It's a really important area.
And Sue, what are you doing for International Day?
I'm actually looking forward to listening to myself this afternoon between 2 and 3.
You are. Sue's a member of Brimback Community Cultural Multicultural Choir, and she recorded a piece for us this afternoon. Well, thanks for joining us, Sue. Thanks for the call.
No worries. Bye.
Bye. And that was Sue from Parkville. Going back to the issues around the legal sector, Adam, one of the things that comes up a fair amount for people with disabilities trying to engage with the system is just getting there. I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago and people were talking about trying to prosecute a case. As you say, a lot of the effort falls back on the person who wants to bring a legal issue. But you've got to use up, you know, at a very basic level, your respite money to even spend time to go and talk to the police, and then maybe it doesn't come off and you've got to go and do it again and you've got to get interpreters, and it all just doesn't work.
Well, the Disability Discrimination Legal Service in that respect is a great service because it's free. So you can receive free legal advice through that service. We also have connections to barristers who will work pro bono for free if matters go to court. But there is always the consideration in terms of the costs of an action. So if you're not successful in that action, there is the possibility that in some way you might have to pay the costs. So that's a barrier as well.
You're listening to 3CR on International Day of People with Disabilities. We're going to have some talk back. Give us a call on disability issues, 9419 0155. One of the issues we want to talk about in a moment is care in the community and getting engaged with the community. People have been moving out of large institutions. We've got a feature this afternoon on shut-in. There's still 400 people in Victoria still in institutions. Some people have moved out but have found it difficult to make friends and engage with the community. And earlier I spoke to Anne and Lil, who came together through an advocacy program that matched people with disabilities with people in the community who wanted to establish some enduring friendships. This is Anne and Lil.
I go on holidays for Easter, school holidays and Christmas. Yes, Andrew, my friend. I was living in Jamesville when Anne picked me up.
We met about 20 years ago through an organisation called Citizen Advocacy, and that's a community-based organisation that was set up particularly to help people who were being deinstitutionalised from the very big institutions 20 years ago, and Citizen Advocacy was there to help them make a transition from that very restricted lifestyle to being out in the community.
So how did you and Lil actually meet? Were you kind of paired up with people or do you just
yes, become paired? Yes, it's a matching process and they look at the needs of the protégés and they look at the strengths and what the mentors have to offer. And so I went through that process and I met two people and Lil was the second person I met and we just clicked. And the first time we actually saw each other, I drove with the coordinator of Citizen Advocacy up the drive of the house and Lil came running out of the house and immediately came up to the car and I got out and before I'd even really got out of the car she threw her arms around me and said, hello, hello. So it was a very, very warm welcome and there was no doubt in my mind that we had been matched.
So it's like any other friends, you just know that you're going to get on with people.
That's right, yeah. And really it was down to Lil. Lil had to make the first choice. And she seemed to like me and accepted me and that was fantastic. It was very challenging at first because we didn't know each other and we didn't know how to communicate. So it took us a long time to find a shared level of communication.
When you're at Anne's, what do you do for fun?
A age plus.
Yeah.
Sometimes I have breakfast early, sometimes, and sometimes I have shower.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes she washes me down very good. She do.
Does she? She's good at that.
Yeah.
Do you do things for fun?
I join in, do the kitchen floor, sweep it, and then do Anne's washing, roll it up.
You sound like you're a very good guest.
I've done all that.
So where do you sleep when you're at Anne's?
In my own bed.
Your own? Is it a nice bedroom?
Yes.
What colour is the room?
Oh, doors is white and my bed is grey.
And what else do you like to do together?
Yeah, I love everything. She gives me Christmas shirt, Christmas one, and this year, when I get up Anne's place, she's going to give me a big birthday cake, and put the candles on, and everybody comes over Anne's place to sing happy birthday to me.
If you were recommending this kind of program or this kind of friendship to other people, what would you say that are the things you've got out of it?
I think one of the best things has been getting to see the world through Lil's eyes. All sorts of things from her experience have taught me a lot about life and different perspectives on life. She's had unique experiences through growing up in the institution and living in common like that, living in a big group is part of a different style of life that has strengths, not just weaknesses and deprivations. And the connection she has with people that she's met through that, they're lifelong.
So what have been some of the highlights for you in this friendship?
We have lots of fun and lots of laughs and
she's a bit wicked with her humour, and she likes to really rib people, and I like that. And she's incredibly affectionate and loving, and that's always so humbling and valued. She's a cherished person in my life.
Anne's the best friend. She's a good driver in the car. She's good. She's got a big car.
And that was Anne and Lil. Anne and Lil became friends when Lil left Janefield, which was one of the larger institutions. And they were matched through a friendship program that encouraged people in the community to make friends with someone with disability, find somebody they thought they would be good friends with, and have a relationship with. You're listening to 3CR, International Day of People with Disabilities, Talk Back. If you want to call us, call on 94190155. One of the issues we wanted to talk about is there's been a big push moving people out of what we term as institutions into what still probably just smaller institutions in a way. Is it an effective thing? Or is it working? Are we really moving people into independent, full lives? Kerry, what do you reckon? Is it working?
Look, I think there are some people for whom it's working really well. And I think with the growth of self-directed supports, people taking control of purchasing the kinds of supports that they want and having flexibility around what they can purchase with their support budget, there are a number of people who will get on really well and be able to participate very actively in the community. But there are groups within the whole group of people with a disability, for example, people with intellectual disability, perhaps more severe intellectual disability, who are very vulnerable and who will struggle to be included. And so we really need that kind of inclusion in community doesn't just happen. Service providers work very hard with their local communities to set up supportive situations and support that inclusion. But we do need some investment by government to improve on this and to make this a reality. Otherwise, the whole state disability plan, the future for people that's designed to be one of empowerment and independence and choice, will be a hollow promise, and that's not what we want. For people with a disability.
You're listening to Talk Back on 3CR on disability issues for International Day of People with Disability. Give us a call on 9419 0155. We'll be on till 11 o'clock. Denise, people are making big decisions about policy and the way people live and where they're going to live and how they're going to live. How do we influence parliamentary and decision makers, policy decision makers, but particularly political decision makers?
Well, I think in that respect, it's very important for people with disabilities, if they are in any way politically active, to either attempt to get on boards or on disability councils. I know in the country there is very few representation for people with disabilities either on a board or a council or anything like that. And I'd like to take this opportunity at the moment to encourage people with disabilities to actually run for office, be it their local shire or their state or federal parliament. I do understand the difficulty in that, though, because it's very strenuous. Actually, going out there campaigning, especially in huge electorates where you're supposed to be able to be working 24/7, it is very difficult for a person with disability to put in that time and those hours. But we have got so much to contribute to the parliamentary system. And unfortunately, I wasn't there long enough to be able to influence the disability side of things because of the fact that, as I was saying before, it was a time when the BRACS government was very tight in their numbers, and they were more concentrated on holding power than they were on having the numbers always there rather than be able to concentrate on somebody, one of their own, who had a disability. But at the same time, we need people with disabilities in there to be able to give their personal experience when making policy, because 9 times out of 10 people who are making policy don't have a disability. They're making it on our behalf, and they don't understand what it's like to live every day, that when you're walking down the street, you're watching your feet every second of the day, you are thinking about what you're doing as part of accommodating your disability, the way you hold a knife, the way you hold a fork, the way you walk. anything like that, it's something that you're constantly thinking about. And where you're going to walk, you're always watching, oh, I better walk there because I can see that there's a ramp there and there's not a step I have to get up. And when I'm walking somewhere, I immediately look for handles to walk up steps, and you immediately identify that there's not a handle. Nor is there a ramp. So you're stumped. Where do you go? So it's these sort of things that have to be brought to the fore. But only people with actually not only people with disabilities, but people with disabilities are the people who are more able to make policy for people with disabilities than people who are abled.
You listen to 3CR Talkback on International Day of People with Disability with me, Helen Gwilliam, Kerry Presser, Adam Jones, and Denise Allen. Denise, we've got the potential for federal and state elections in the next 12 months. If somebody decides they think they want to run for Parliament, whichever party, and you rock up and you've got an evident physical disability, or you disclose some form of intellectual disability or head injury or mental illness, how well do you think that would be received, or would people then immediately cross you off the list?
I really can't explain how the various branches of any party would approach somebody. Probably the most acceptable people of people with disabilities would be the Greens and then the Labor Party. But I don't know them, and I'm only going on my personal bias. Look, I really don't know how branches or they would accept that. You know, I just know that. That when I was there, it was a very, very difficult time. I actually, probably the person I had the most sympathy from when I was there was, of all people, Robert Doyle, who is now the Mayor of Melbourne. And he was just wonderful. He was always asked how I was, always asked if there was anything he could do. And he was just very, very sympathetic towards people with disabilities. So that's why I'm actually going to approach him about the disability access within the CBD, because of the fact that there are very few disabled parks within the CBD.
It is very difficult to find that kind of information, to actually, if you want to be independent, getting out and finding information so that you can just do things. It's a bit of a treasure hunt. Is there anything that, apart from good maps of where you live and parking and access, what else do we need? Adam, have you got any bugbears?
Well, I think this comes down to, wasn't born with a disability in the same way that Denise wasn't born with a disability. I think it comes down to the fact that we aren't given instruction books either when we have a disability or when we get a disability. I think there needs to be some kind of organisation that can get in contact with people with disabilities, or people with disabilities can contact about trying to then reorganise your life in a way that's going to accommodate your disability. I don't know, Kerry, whether those organisations already exist, but at the moment, everything that I do in terms of my disability is a matter of trial and error in respect to finding solutions to the various problems and barriers. So it's very much on a sort of problem-by-problem basis. So I don't know whether there's something that exists that can look at it as a whole and say, okay, well, this is where you can come to, or this is how we can assist you.
Look, I think that Adam's point is well made, because information and finding out, you know, what you need is incredibly difficult. We've been there's an idea about that I like, which is about some central point in a community that's maybe located in a local government office, local council, somewhere like that, that everybody uses, that can provide information for people living in that community, because I think it's incredibly difficult. Parents of young children who have disabilities have reported to me in the past that the way that they found out about things that would be useful for them was through other parents, and that shouldn't need to be the case. Yeah. We need to have a much better system.
You're listening to 3CR on International Day of People with Disabilities on Talkback. Give us a call, 94190155, up until 11 o'clock. We heard there Anne and Lillian talk about moving out from a bigger institution. Is there still a place for bigger places but just better ones?
I think the move from away from institutions is a good one. I think we
We don't have good evidence about how many places, how many residents in a house are too many, for example. But what we do know is that people's quality of life is improved when they live in smaller rather than larger residential situations, and we do know that people want choice. And so the move to move people out from institutions has been happening over many years. What was deemed a good alternative in the 70s or the 80s was really the group home concept. But we look at that and we say, no, that's something that just isn't right for so many people. I mean, four or five, six people coming together who don't know each other, who have a range of needs. You know, it's difficult enough living with your own family and people you choose to live with, let alone the ones that you don't choose to live with. So I think as a community, as a society, we really need to be looking at a range of options that give people choice and more privacy and enable them to live.
Absolutely, Kerry. I couldn't agree more with you on that, because of the fact that why is it just because you have a disability, the only way you're accommodated in accommodation is with six other people.
Who you don't know.
Who you don't know.
You wouldn't do that with
an able-bodied person or a person who didn't have a disability of any other sort. Mm. So why is it that people with disabilities, the only accommodation policy that they can come up with is to put people in a resident with six others? I mean, it's just extraordinary. I've actually spent 20-odd years ago, when I didn't have a disability, I was teaching people with physical disabilities and also mental challenges to actually get back out in life skills, to get back out in the society, to have independent lives. And it was a wonderful experience. I would like to think now that those people are living independent lives, but to actually clump everybody together in, you know, like just because you have a disability, there's six of you in the one house.
That's right.
You can go and live in
a commune.
Unfortunately, I think it's a reflection of a lack of sort of a holistic approach to working with people with disabilities, in terms of, on the one hand, theoretically, it seems like a great idea to move people out of institutions. But on the other hand, if you don't then have somewhere else that suitably accommodates those people in that different circumstance, then you actually exacerbate the problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So quite often we have people calling in about the fact that they're not able to gain a rental, or that in terms of the people that they're living with in the rental, there's no accommodation of their disability.
Mm-hmm. Look, certainly many of our member organisations have built units to enable people to live independently or perhaps with one other person. But I think our challenge is really getting disability on the public and social housing agenda. We don't have any kind of quota, and there's been a huge investment by the Commonwealth Government in relation to new public and social housing. And we want to see people with a disability considered in that mix, as they should be.
Absolutely, but on the advisory of all that policy making, that people with disabilities are on those advisory committees or advisory boards. I've always said, since having a disability, that you become so aware, and I've always said that if the world was designed for people with disabilities, it has to make able-bodied people's lives 10 times easier.
Yes,
and it flabbergasts me that they don't. They haven't accommodated people with disabilities first and foremost. I can remember when I won Benalla and I had moved into the electorate office. I had to move electorate offices because the electorate office I had was just, I don't know how elderly people or disabled people got into that office and accessed the previous member, because they had to go up two flights of stairs to even get to him. Mm-hmm. And I actually moved offices where I had them design a disabled access into the office. It was the very first thing that I did, was have a disabled access office. But it's I just get flabbergasted about these whole things because of the fact that people with disabilities should be accommodated. And as Kerry was saying, it's a human right.
That's right.
It's not something we should be fighting for in 2010.
That's right.
You know, it's...
No, so any new housing should be built with some basic features that include, you know, no step access, wider hallways, bathrooms that are big enough to accommodate a wheelchair and so forth.
Yep. You're listening to 3CR Talkback on International Day of People with Disabilities with me, Helen Gwilliam, Kerry Presser from National Disability Services, Adam Jones, a solicitor, and Denise Allen, former Labor member for Benalla. It's not just about accommodation, though, is it, built access? It's about all sorts of access to public buildings, but also to employment. One of the things that I'm getting increasingly fed up with is people getting the idea that they should provide services to people with disabilities, but not having accessible places of employment. I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago. People were talking about tourism, and people had all the great things about, you know, we've got a couple of wheelchair-accessible rooms, and we've got this, and we've built our boardwalks, and people can come here and have a great experience. But no one with, you know, significant disability could have worked there. And so it's the whole built environment that needs to incorporate all sorts of issues, sensory disabilities, physical disabilities, people with visual impairments, all of that kind of stuff. Are we going to see a bigger picture? It's not just about where we're going to live.
And then you had to get there.
That's right.
And getting there airline. To actually even attempt to work in that building with employment is a challenge in itself, because public transport is, I mean, I just couldn't work in the inner city. Every time I'm looking for a job, I'm looking to move to Melbourne. And when I'm looking for employment in the city, I avoid the city like the plague because of the fact that I would have to use public transport and I can't get on and off a tram. Mm. It's, yes. And it's difficult being pushed and shoved in peak hour, and I just quite simply couldn't cope with that. I would have to have access to disabled parking in the building that I was working in, which wouldn't be provided.
You're listening to 3CR Friday Breakfast on International Day of People with Disabilities on Talkback. Give us a call, 94190155. We have Bill online from Lilydale. Hi, Bill.
Hi there, panel. I was just wanting to sort of add a contribution to the Talkback.
Go ahead.
I think on public transport, having worked in that area, especially if one's travelling up and down in a train, constantly, you see the driver getting out and actually taking a sort of aluminium sort of panel and putting it down in order for wheelchairs to get into the train. Surely, I mean, in any sort of modern train system, they could have the driver could just more or less press a button and sort of some sort of a platform coming out.
Well, you think.
And that would simplify. It must be very frustrating for the driver. He's got to actually put that platform, constantly get out of the train and physically put that ramp down and then physically take it back. And, of course, that creates, I think in this day and age it's totally unnecessary. As you said, it's 2010, we're almost coming to. We do have the knowledge and the technology to be, make a much more improved system.
Yes, well, then it could be on all carriages, couldn't it?
Well, that's right. And they're saying that actually in Europe, talking about trains, I mean, and now with the overcrowding, they say that in many cases they run about 12 carriages actually on a line. To accommodate it. I think here it's only about 6.
Yeah.
And of course that's totally, especially if you're getting all this greater density of a population now, as we're experiencing, the system can't cope with that. And it even makes it much more difficult for people with disabilities to move around in the peak periods.
Well, that's right, which is the time you need to get to work.
Yes, because you can't compete with the pushing and shoving.
Yeah, and just to say that it's very positive just listening to sort of feedback and the positive ideas. I mean, I thought the big institutions, I thought they were okay in their day. I mean, having witnessed many of these people, and unfortunately, I think we live in a very much of a more of a jungle than anything else, and there's always a survival of the fittest, and unfortunately, many people who do have disabilities are not treated in the manner they should, but, I mean, that's just the way the society is. We always look for better. There are sympathetic and understanding people.
Oh, good manners go a long way for anybody, though, don't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, well, you did say that about Robert Doyle. I mean, Robert Doyle, I mean, he does come across as a sort of a gentle type, but there again, I mean, anyway, it's just a wonderful discussion, and it's nice to listen to something different.
Thanks, Phil. That's great to hear. You're listening.
I think Joe Toscano was supposed to be on today.
Joe was out at Eureka. He was at Ballarat.
I knew that because that would be his.
Can I take the opportunity to, just before, because it's getting close to 11, to raise the issues? We haven't discussed people with vision impairment. And my father actually was legally blind, and I actually on various occasions assisted my mother caring for my father. He died of dementia 5 years ago. But even just on being out and about with my father when he being blind, how people wouldn't talk to him because they actually had the impression, because he couldn't see them, that they wouldn't speak to him, and people would push and shove him even though he had a white cane. You know, and that's comes back to the fact that it's just simply respect and good manners in dealing with people with disabilities. And I know if I don't use my walking stick, I've actually taken to using a walking stick because it's a visual aid that people can actually see that I need some assistance with my disability, but I don't like using it. But if I don't use it, people just think I've hurt my ankle, and they just think, oh, you know, there's something wrong with her. She's obviously hurt her foot or something. But if they can see a visual aid, then, you know, it's sort of a little bit more acceptable. But with my father, who was blind, it was really interesting watching other people communicate with him.
You're listening to 3CR. We've got our next caller is Mark, who's calling from Ringwood. Hi, Mark.
How are you going?
Good. What would you like to say?
One thing that hasn't been raised this morning is the subject of the actual ideology of capitalism itself.
Mm-hmm. And how does that affect people?
The fact that ideology itself is basically the main cause of why people with disabilities are being treated like dirt in a lot of ways. Because I was fighting in battles in the 1980s to deinstitutionalise people in People for Equality and on institutionalisation. And we were trying to actually get charter workshops closed. We went on picket lines outside the RVIB at the time, which is now Vision Australia. We had help from the BLF. I'm now a member of the Socialist Party of Australia, and I'm active in that and recruiting and all the rest of it. And so I believe we're firmly in a socialist alternative rather than relying on capitalism to serve the interests of a marginalised group of people.
Yeah, I was reading in the paper today about this inquiry into lifelong care, and one of the comments in the paper was that, you know, there is an economic case for providing care for people with disabilities rather than just a right.
Exactly, because what you're talking about there is the ideology of the day where everything's privatised, it's ideologically driven. So you've got, on the back of the Howard era, which was purely had fascist tendencies, you've got a business party like the Labor Party who've got no interest at all, really, in actually changing the system to a point where it'll actually do anything but serve the interests of big business, and thereby people with disabilities are always going to find themselves on the outer, in a sense that basically they're going to be wage slaves anyway if they do get employed, whereas a socialist alternative, people will basically be looked after in every way from the cradle to the grave. So then they can have a job and work with a socialist system in a cooperative way.
Okay, I might throw to the panel then. Anyone like to comment on the way that the value we put on people is playing into care for people with disabilities?
Oh, look, I'm sorry, what was your name again?
That was Mark.
Mark, you're absolutely right. It's I think that there is very little value put on people with disability and the contribution they can make to society in so many ways. And I'm not going to get into a political debate about this, but I do think that I would just quite simply like to see more people with disabilities run for office, as I said, either local or state or federal parliament. And we've got in 2006, I actually ran for People Power instead of the Labor Party.
Yeah.
Purely because of the fact that they had a wonderful policy around disabilities and carers and the marginalised people in our society. It was this very, very reason I chose to run for People Power. Now I would probably do it as an independent.
Yeah, I mean, the Socialist Party treat me like royalty, and that's because I'm a comrade.
Yeah.
And if you've got a disability and you're a comrade, it doesn't matter, you're a valued member of that party. And I mean,
Mark, I think that in terms of what Denise says and what you're saying as well, we keep coming back to trying to get more people with disabilities involved in politics, and I think that a major aspect of this is the organisation of people with disabilities in terms of organising parties or organising some kind of political movement that will cater for the needs of people with disabilities. Now, on the one hand, that's a little bit difficult in terms of everything else that we have to manage in respect to living in a world without disabilities, but on the other hand, it's really essential that we come together as a group to address these issues.
We'll have to leave it there, Mark. Thanks very much for your call.
Thanks very much. Okay.
And that was Mark from Ringwood. Thanks, everyone, to their calls today, and thank you to the panel. We're just coming up to 11. I'd just like to thank Kerry Presser from National Disability Services, Denise Allen, former member for Benalla, and Adam, if you want to quickly finish with us on a more positive note about disability, I know you wanted to say something about the funnier side.
I think one of the great things about having a disability is a disabled community. I have in the past done some stand-up comedy in relation to having a disability. I call myself the Greater Damo in respect to, one, recognising my disability, but also on the other side, recognising that people with disabilities are, in fact, the people who are pushing the species forward. As you may recognise with Darwinian theory, it's the mutants that take the species
That's
forward.
That's on you now.
The level of form of species. So I think that in 1,000 years, everyone will be tall, bald, and skinny like myself. bald in terms of being able to photosynthesize because there won't be enough food in the world for us to survive, and skinny in terms of all the people on the planet.
It's good to finish with a laugh.
Thank you, everyone, and have a great International Day of People with Disability.
Thank you.
And up next, we've got more of 3CR for the day. We've got sports and culture stories.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.